thank you all for being with us.
Yes, glad to be here.
Thank you for having us.
So April said that when she was younger, she stabbed herself in the arm to see whether there was darker skin underneath. I suppose a literal exploration of her own race. What do you guys think as her parents hearing that fact?
I was just surprised to hear that story because I didn't realize in the mind of a small child, when you tell her that she's half black, half white, that that would be literally interpreted and needed probably further explanation. So I sad in one way, but cute in another way, just the innocence or the literalness of the statement half black, half white.
Right. It strikes me almost, April, as looking for half your mom and half your dad within your skin.
When I looked at other families, I saw how they kind of added up to the child, that everybody kind of looked like each other. But based on my skin tone and looking at my parents when I was growing up, I didn't understand how my brother and I could possibly come from this combination. It just didn't make any sense to me. So I remember if I had any questions, I would always get, oh, well, you're half black. So I thought that literally meant when I looked in the mirror, half of me should be my dad's skin tone while the other half should be my mother's, which isn't true. So I took matters into my own hands, found a piece of glass in the backyard, and I remember stabbing myself. Not all that hard, but just only the conclusive thing was blood and pain and nothing else. There was no, because I thought underneath this layer of skin tone must be one that looks more like my father's, and underneath that one must be one that looks like my mother's, and so on and so forth.
Is this the first time you guys have talked about this, or is this a story that's well known in the family?
It's a story that's well known in the family, I think. To a certain extent, at least I've had these conversations with my daughter and my son as well.
In the story we heard from Jenny Brundine, our education reporter, April said that you don't talk much about race because you don't want April and her brother to think a lot about it, which is a little bit of a contradiction to what you just said.
What
Rock.
I just said, yes, yeah. but what I tend to be a little bit more visual. I expose them to things that they can see and tangibly touch and experience.
What's an example of that?
An example is that I'm a bus driver. I'm a city bus driver. And so they have the opportunity to ride with me and see a lot of different cultures that come up on my bus. And I will say, look, see this person here? They're in this situation because not only did they put themselves there, but they aren't seeing beyond what they can achieve. They aren't giving themselves the opportunity to go beyond what society expects of them.
Who might fit that bill that would get on the bus?
A lot of minorities fit that bill that get on the bus. Even teenage parents, things of that nature. I'll take April and I'll say, look, I don't want you in this situation. Learn from your experiences right now. See where they are. Go beyond that.
And now that's not an overt discussion of race, but I suppose it touches on race.
It touches on race. Yes, it does, because a majority of them are black, Hispanic. That's what I get.
Do these lessons stand out in your mind, April?
He does do a very good job of pointing out what he wants for me and what he doesn't want for me. But overall, I would say growing up, until very recently, until race has become my passion and diversity has been something that I've spoken out for at school, it wasn't a conversation that we had from both my mom and my dad. I don't really remember telling them about the story of the glass. In fact, I remember keeping it to myself because I didn't want them to be upset. And I remember that growing up, my own racial identity, I now refuse to use the term half black. I say I'm mixed black and white because it does cause a lot of confusion. Like, what's the other half?
Oh, right. That's right. If you say half black, right, you're not saying half white. Or if you say half white, you're not saying half black.
Yeah. And it's assumed when people say half black that the other half is white. Or when you say biracial, which is a term that I also don't use, you assume that it's a black and white mixed person. But like I said, I say multiracial or I'm mixed. And then I go on to say what I'm mixed with. What started to happen is I started to read different books to help me kind of go through this confusion. But I didn't bring it to the attention of my parents or to my brother.
What do you think hearing that, Laura? And let me ask you, was there a conscious decision to talk or not talk about race? You entered a mixed race relationship. To what extent did this question arise for you?
So I wouldn't say there was a conscious effort to not talk about it or to talk about it. I'll back up a little bit. The story, the glass story, completely new to me in the last month. Not a well-known story, at least for me. So I kind of wish I had known, because then it would have started a conversation. I suppose in a naive way didn't realize I was supposed to talk about race, or that I should have talked about race, or that it would become so important for April and her brother. So naive in a sense, I guess I really tried to instill and still do, and it sounds so cliche, but the golden rule. You treat people like you want to be treated. And when people are hard on you or difficult people, usually that reflects something within. But we didn't talk about race. I didn't know we needed to.
Did you face any discrimination yourself marrying someone who's African-American?
Twice, I think I remember something on like a public bus or some racial slurs.
But not within your family?
No, never.
So it might have been that you didn't think to talk about race because it wasn't a huge issue even for you.
That's correct. But when you say race isn't a huge issue for you as a white person, inside you feel like, well, of course it's not an issue for you. You're white. Now that we have the conversations, and we do every night, it's hard as the white person to really say anything, because I remember a therapist had once said something about white pride. It's a hard thing to ever say without feeling yicky.
Brock, what's your reaction to that? Do you think that there's a naivete, as Laura has said from her perspective?
Yes. Yes, I do think that there is a naivete within our own family unit, being that it never came to mind. Being a parent and wanting to raise the best child that you can, I never thought of it as a major issue until April began to express the way she felt about it.
And April, when did it first become an issue for you? Was there a triggering event?
Well, for me, it has always been something that I thought about since I was very young. But after the whole arm incident, I kind of let it go. And then starting when I went into grade school at Escuela de Guadalupe, it is a predominantly Latino school, and I didn't know where I fit in, because I saw a lot of kids who were Latinos sitting with the Latinos, and then the few white kids that there were sitting with the white kids, and like the three black kids that there were at the school sitting with the black kids. And I'm like, where do I go?
Who did you sit with?
This is when I was really awkward. I was actually really bullied at the school because I was so awkward. I would position myself, there was a white table, and I would put my tray down at the table but face outside, because I wasn't friends with those kids and I didn't know where else to sit.
Oh, I see. You'd sort of reach behind you and grab an apple or something.
Yeah, that's how that went.
It was a literal manifestation of
it definitely was
psychological not belonging,
right?
You felt.
Yeah, and then after going through that, I went to Colorado Academy starting in middle school, still very confused as far as what to be. But all of a sudden, I saw way more racially diverse of a school. Out of nowhere, I had classmates who were Asian. I had never had classmates who were Asians. I saw more black kids than I did at my other school. I saw way more white kids than I did. But I saw my brother, he identified as a black male. So I figured, well, if he's doing that and it kind of seems like he's being accepted as that, then I should be able to do that too. And what I learned is we weren't accepted as that. So it became a whole new kind of struggle going through there.
Is that a whole question of darkness of skin?
Definitely.
I call it a sense of not being enough. She wasn't white enough to be accepted, and she wasn't black enough to be accepted. And she being able to recognize it is truly amazing to me. She wants to be able to check a box, per se, is what I call it. Like her mother can check a box, I can check a box, Hispanics can check a box. But being of mixed race, she wants to be able to check a box too.
Did you face, growing up, did you face racism, bias?
Yes, in some cases I did. Yes, I did. And I would tend to want to educate that person. I think racism and prejudice is a taught trait. It's not an innate trait.
A taught trait.
You taught that. So if you're able to embrace that as a minority and be willing to educate the other person, maybe they can see things from a different light.
Laura, anything to add?
I'd like to go back to when April was talking about her brother. I suppose that's when it really became kind of an emotionally charged conversation at our house, was when Clay would say, I am black, I identify as black, and I'm black. And I'd get upset because I'd say, same at the same time Obama was being elected as the first black president. And I kept thinking, what about the white mom? You're denying me as your mom when you say that you're black. So I prefer the term biracial because I like April's because she can expand a little bit if she says mixed. Mixed with what? But when my son would say, oh, I know, I get to legally be black, I'm black, it just felt like I was disregarded because as a whole, well, I'm your mom.
Does he still say it?
No, not that I know of, but I bet if he were asked to check a box and there wasn't an option, he would put African-American.
What was his reaction to your reaction?
We'd get heated. Now, we're talking teenage years, which everything got heated, but it would get heated. It would be an argument.
Going off of that, both my parents are here. They get along well. They've been friends for as long as I can remember, but they are divorced. And as a result, my mother moved in with her boyfriend, Mike, who is white. And my brother and I spent most of our time living with them based on my dad's work schedule. So within that context, it just made things a little bit, I think, more confusing and harder for me and my brother to grapple with because we weren't really exposed to any sort of racial identity that we could identify with because it wasn't something that my mom and her boyfriend felt the need to talk about. So when things did get heated, it would get heated within a community or within a family union that wasn't very open to the discussion or wasn't ready, didn't have the means to have that discussion just based on how they identified.
Well, you're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. And as part of our series, Race in the Classroom, we're speaking with parents Brock Edwards and Laura Jolly of Denver. Edwards is African-American. Jolly is white. And joining us also is their mixed-race daughter, April. Is it difficult to not look squarely like either one of your parents? I mean, you certainly have features of both, right? But talk to me about that, growing up potentially with people perceiving something about you that wasn't true. That's not your mom. That's not your dad.
So growing up, it was very difficult. I used to have, until like sixth grade, I used to have straight, very straight hair. So I was a light-skinned mixed girl with straight hair and big green eyes. So when I looked at my father, I really didn't see the relation offhand. I knew that he was my father. I knew that he loved me like a father, but I didn't necessarily see how I came from him. And then when I looked at my mother, I always really had very profound lips, so I didn't really see how that kind of how that came from her. And then growing up, my hair started to get curlier, and I started to grow in, I would say, to my facial features, and I started to look more like my father. But my skin always remained very light, and I often get from strangers of me being Puerto Rican, which used to make me very, very upset because I'm like, no, I'm not Puerto Rican. There's no Latina blood in me. And then I Googled some pictures of Puerto Rican people, and I actually do look extremely Puerto Rican. So I began to empathize with people who made that assumption.
April, your parents, Laura and Brock, made a decision to date a different race. Do you have some kind of outlook for yourself on what that is for you?
Right. So far, I've only been with black guys. And my reasoning behind that is, as a person of color, my identity, given the struggle that I've gone through, is I want my significant other to be able to relate to that. But whether it has to be strictly black guy, no. Am I more hesitant on dating someone who's white? Yes. Just because I do want that part of that identity to be there.
What are you sick of answering? What questions are you tired of having to answer?
Probably, what are you, and can I touch your hair? Those are probably the two questions that I'm done with. And I write a lot of poetry, and I've actually written a slam poem about answering the what are you question. I've strategically figured out how to answer this question based on my mood.
I would find it really annoying if people asked to touch my hair, too.
Yes.
God.
I ran across that in elementary school.
It's so aggressive in a way.
And it was more the parents than the children, at least for me, because it was so different.
I have a question. Why do you find that aggressive?
Oh, I think strangers asking to touch your person is just, I think that's invasive.
Invasive, maybe, perhaps. It's. I remember as a small child wanting to touch my neighbor's hair because she could tie a ponytail without a twisty tie, you know, African, and it was amazing to me. I can't even tie a knot in my hair if I tried. So it was a curiosity thing. It certainly wasn't, as a child, never meant to be invasive.
Let's wrap up with this, Laura and Brock. Having heard what you've heard today and the ongoing conversations with April and your son, is there anything you would have done differently as parents of mixed race children?
Yes. I would have exposed her more to African American culture in a positive way. I still hopefully I still have the opportunity to do so. I feel that she wasn't. She and her brother weren't given the opportunity to explore that side of their family as much as they could have done so.
And Laura?
I would have liked to have asked more questions, especially after the story of her not understanding what that meant as a small child. So I would have liked to ask more questions. What does that mean to you? And I definitely would have pursued someone to teach me how to care for her hair. And, yes, that's my biggest regret.
And listen
regret.
More. I would also listen more and hear her side along with their brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.